Shot, no shot. With Cap and J Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. That's why I see him
in my shot. Shot or no shot brought to you by Club Hawthorne and the Club Hawthorne mobile wagering app. I did play the horses each day laying on the couch.
I bet you did.
It was, whether it was Belmont or Churchill or Woodbine or Parks, whatever. I was on my app. I'm like, I'll put a couple dollars on that horse. Hit a few. Lost more than I won, but it was passing the time. That was it. Time to play our game. Here is J.R. Strauss, and Shay will sit in the role for Hoodie.
Morning, guys. How's it going?
It's all right. How are you?
It's a tough weekend for everybody, I think. Cap, I know they canceled everything by me. I know by you as well. Just not really in a celebratory mood, you know?
Correct.
But happy to be here this morning with you guys.
Yeah, good to be back. Good to be testing negative. And I took a test this morning. I'm like, please let it be negative. Please let it be negative. All right. Said goodbye to the dogs. Away we go.
Thank goodness it would have been me and Shay looking at each other.
That's correct. You guys would have, if I had to call, I don't have a Comrex box there. I would have called and gone, guys, not going to happen, but we're good. Go ahead.
Your guy, Seiya Suzuki, made a triumphant return to the Cubs lineup yesterday with a 2-for-4 performance at the plate and this highlight reel home run.
2-0 pitch. Suzuki gets a hold of one. Back that goes. Off the wall. Center and a good ricochet for Seiya, heading for third. They're going to wave him in. Suzuki heads for home. The throw to the plate, not in time. Seiya Suzuki touches them all, and the Cubs grab a 2-1 lead off of Josh Hader.
Inside the park home run, the Cubs did go on to lose to Milwaukee in the 10th, but it did nothing to sour Seiya's game tying moment. Shot or no shot, Seiya Suzuki is the most exciting athlete in Chicago?
Yeah, I'm going to say no shot at this point. Yeah, it was a cool moment, but...
Hey, Roy, how you feeling?
Roy's going to get on a roll here and win me my Rookie of the Year bet, but... Yeah, no, I can't go there. You're going to tell me he's more exciting than Patrick Kane, who's the greatest U.S.-born hockey player of all time... and is going to go down as one of the greatest NHL players of all time? No. Maybe years from now we could say that. Yeah, no. Say it. Love him. Glad he's a Cub. He is not the most exciting player in Chicago sports. Sorry.
I'm going to say shot because I'll tell you what. As an outsider living in this town, I'm not a fan of any of these teams, but I watch them every single night. Seiya is going to make watching the Cubs palatable. I think he's the only guy in this town right now, for me, where I can, I turn on the White Sox, I want to watch the White Sox. When I turn on the Cubs, I'm turning it on to watch Seiya Suzuki. I'm not a hockey guy, so I'm not going to say, Patrick Kane or anybody's bringing me to the Blackhawks. I'm not really watching the hockey. The Bulls, Levine's great, but he's not the most exciting guy that's going to draw me to watch Bulls basketball. Seiya will make me watch the Cubs when I otherwise wouldn't. And I don't know that there's another player in this town that will do that for me. So I'm going to say shot.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Stop. Whoa, hon. Hang on a minute. Don't put dinner down. Need to watch Seiya's at bat. No.
Hey, Roy, how you feeling?
Yeah, this is not Sammy Sosa or Frank Thomas at the plate. Well, the question was asked today on July 5th. Who's the most exciting player? He does not qualify.
Are you a player development guy? I love watching the young guys and the new guys come up, develop. That's really exciting to me. So even just watching him be have these awesome plays as a young up-and-coming guy is really exciting for me to watch. That's what gets me excited about watching the Cubs right now.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not fun to watch. I watch. I'll be watching tonight. But no, I'm not going to co-sign it. He's the most exciting player in Chicago sports. Stop yourself. Not even close. JR.
He is no Keegan Thompson. Guys, the Chicago Bulls offseason plan is abundantly clear. It's continuity. The Bulls will keep the core of their roster intact by extending Zach LaVine on a full 5-year max worth $215 million. And they added supplementary pieces like Andre Drummond and Goran Dragic. Shot or no shot, with LaVine as the centerpiece and the existing core, the Bulls can contend for a title over the next 5 years.
Depends on player development and health. Is Lonzo Ball going to play more than 40 games? Is Zach LaVine's knee 100% now? And is Patrick Williams going to develop into the all-star they projected for him and they picked him fourth overall? If you could tell me Dalen Terry is going to be a really solid draft pick, we forget Jimmy Butler, who's a star, was the 30th pick overall. He barely saw the floor as a rookie. But after like year four, we're like, whoa, that guy's really good. Now he's a star. Is Patrick Williams, Dalen Terry, those guys going to be that type of player? So I can't co-sign that they're going to contend for a title till I see all that.
I will say shot, they can contend for a title, but I think I agree with where you're at. A lot needs to go right if they're going to get there. It's good you've locked up your best player. You have your centerpiece for your core in Zach LaVine. The rest kind of now hinges on, and Hoodie will tell you, well, if everything hinges on Patrick Williams improving and becoming a really good NBA player, you're already sunk. I kind of disagree. I think year three, you really have to start to see a leap. So this year, he's got to come out and really start to look better for me to believe. But if he comes out and he looks like he can be a 20, 25-minute-a-night guy and score some points and get some buckets for you, then I think you're cooking with gas. And you have something where, yeah, in 5 years, if things go right, look at Boston. They built it with homegrown guys. They built it with young people and young guys, and they got to the NBA Finals. So I think you can contend, but a lot has to go really, really right. And you have to nail those moves on the margins.
Have to.
Like Drummond and Dragic have to be contributors.
Agreed. JR.
Guys, the Brooklyn Nets owner Joe Tsai has made it clear that there's no urgency to trade Kevin Durant if they don't like their options, saying the situation could, quote, drag into training camp if they don't get an offer that they like. Durant's market is sure to be an unprecedented haul, especially after Rudy Gobert fetched a platoon of players and four first-round picks in the trade to Minnesota. Shot or no shot, Kevin Durant will play at least one game in Brooklyn this season.
That's a shot, because if I was Joe, is it Tsai or Tsai?
Joe Tsai.
Joe Tsai. If I was Joe Tsai, Kevin, if I don't get the deal that I want, you either take your money or go home. Sit. I am not going to just roll over and acquiesce to your demands. You don't make the rules. You don't have a no trade clause in your contract. You can't demand anything. So just because you want to go to Phoenix or Miami, either I get what I want, or you're either playing for me or you're sitting at home.
Yeah, that's shot. I think he's going to play in Brooklyn. And I think it comes down to whether or not Joe Tsai and the rest of the Brooklyn front office kind of have the balls to tell Kevin Durant, no, buddy, we have the power, not you. We have the power. You signed here. You have 4 years left on this deal. You're playing here or you're not playing. Like, it's that simple. And they have to have the balls to kind of say that. But if they don't get a godfather offer from somebody, and you look at what Rudy Gobert went for, which stunned me. I mean, four picks, three of them unprotected, and a host of players, including Malik Beasley and Patrick Beverley. Like, that's a haul. If Kevin Durant's going to need to fetch more than that, I don't know that it's going to happen before training camp. I don't know that it's going to happen before the start of the season. Maybe he just doesn't play, but I think the only way he doesn't play a game for Brooklyn is if he intentionally sits out, if he holds out.
So if they said to you, Kevin Durant to the Chicago Bulls, the price is Coby White, Patrick Williams, Ayo Dosunmu, Nikola Vucevic, and four number one picks. You doing that?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
I would do it. I think he's got more time left than a lot of people do. I know Hoodie wouldn't do it. I would probably do it. I think you give up. Patrick Williams is tough there, but you give up Vucevic, who was not great last season. You're not giving up a ton of minutes from your rotation because Coby White came off the bench. The picks, I mean, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, in my opinion. So I would rather have Kevin Durant than rolling the dice on the future first.
Who's he playing with? Who's your interior?
DeRozan, LaVine, I guess Drummond becomes your starting center, which is a nightmare.
Yeah, you're not good enough.
It might make you an Eastern Conference Finals. He was a shoe size away from beating Milwaukee by himself.
Yeah, disagree. I would not do it. No thanks.
I have a sidebar. May I approach?
You may. Brought to you by Enken Law. 3126 million for the great Howard Enken.
I don't think it's bad for the NBA in the sense that people will go away from the NBA. How bad is it for the idea of competitive balance and for small market organizations? The fact that Kevin Durant can sign a 5-year deal in Brooklyn and after 1 year passes in that deal, just go, yeah, I don't want to play here anymore. I'm a free agent. Is this ultimately really going to damage the way that the league kind of has players and competitive balance throughout it?
I don't know if it's going to damage it. I think what you have to have is ownership that has some cojones to go, nope, not happening. Sorry. We signed you. We're paying you well. Either bring me a deal that is so in my favor or I'm out.
So far, we haven't seen that, though, because we saw Paul George walk into Sam Presti's office and go, hey, man, I want to play in L.A. Okay. What can I do about it? Have fun, Paul.
What did he get? He got a haul.
Got a haul, but he also gave up a guy who finished third for MVP.
He wasn't winning with him anyway. Again, I'm setting a price. Kevin, tell your agents, here's the price. If I don't get it, get ready to play in Brooklyn. Period. I'm not going to just do it. Period. 312-332-3776. One more? All right, quickly.
Yeah, well, this one's a personal one. It comes from my weekend, Cap. As you know, I have another job, and I was at my other job this weekend, and it happened to be at a bar where I met this very lovely couple, a gentleman named Armando, and a woman, we'll call her Kelly because I can't remember her first name. Anyway, they were sitting there admiring my beard. Mm-hmm. They had said that they really liked it, and they liked the fact that it was gray, and that I just kind of let it grow out.
They asked you to go home with them?
And the woman asked to touch my beard. Again, this is a thing. I don't understand why people want to touch my beard, but she asked to touch my beard. And as she is reaching out to do it, I'm like, or whatever. I mean, first of all, I don't know where her hands have been. Second of all, she's grabbing my beard and she's looking at her husband. She goes, see, you should have grown it this long. This is awesome. And then 5 minutes later, as I'm standing there, they invited me onto their boat, which was just conveniently down the street, and wondered if I wanted to go on a boat with them later for the fireworks. Shot or no shot, I was propositioned.
That's a shot.
100%
that's a shot. 100% that's a shot. 100% she's like, bring him home.
Did they have a swing on that boat, JR?
I did not go and check out the boat.
Why?
I chose to go home. Because I did not want to wake up in the middle of the lake missing a kidney. I did not know these people, Cap. What? I mean, I don't know.
You might have been a little lighter, JR, in the sack area, but I don't know that you would have lost a kidney. I think you just didn't go because you're a nice family man. You respected everything you have going on at home.
Yes, that's correct.
But they absolutely propositioned you.
Yeah, 100%. Proud of you. Proud of you.
Thanks, Cap. For the beard or for the turn?
No, not the beard. Sorry. 3-1. We're thinking of putting a Yankee rule in here. No beards. 312-332-3776.
I can be bought. Let's go.
Albert Breer needs to move up, so we're going to talk NFL with Albert next.
David Kaplan.
Jonathan Hood.
This is Cap and J Hood. Follow on Twitter at Cap J Hood.
On ESPN 1000.
And the ESPN Chicago app.
Hello.
Football on ESPN 1000.
Hello, Bert.
Albert Breer.
Hey, Bert.
Senior NFL writer for SI.com joins Cap and J Hood.
Bert's it.
What? You're it, Bert.
On ESPN 1000.
What do you mean I'm it?
We see, that's the game. I just tagged you, and you're it until you tag somebody else.
Albert Breer.
No, I'm not playing a game. I'm reading, Ernie, and I'm not it.
Okay.
On Chicago's Home for Sports.
What Bert is it?
Our guy, Bert Breer, from SI.com Monday Morning Quarterback, brought to you by Curcio Law Offices. Bert, good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We are hanging in there. Our community in the northern suburbs rocked from yesterday. We talked about it earlier. It's just doesn't stop, man. It just every day. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody doesn't recognize. We have problems. You know, and I obviously I think everybody everywhere else in the country. Our thoughts are with you guys in Chicago. I can remember, when that happened, in our backyard with the Marathon bombing. God, that was 9 years ago now. And these things have happened with such regularity. It feels like, you know, everybody's sort of had to feel that, like where it happens in your backyard and the difference, you know. And maybe it shouldn't be different, but it is, you know, when it happens, you know, in your backyard. And so, and I can remember, you know, that happened, the Marathon bombing happened 3 blocks from where I lived at the time. Nice. And how that hit, how that hit people around me. And, you know, I certainly have a lot of empathy for the people in Chicago today because I can remember what that feels like.
Appreciate your thoughts. So let's talk about Robert Quinn. There's now renewed speculation. First of all, the Bears fire one of the guys on the search committee, Soup Campbell, who was part. They talked about when they fired Pace and Nagy, Soup is going to be instrumental on our search committee. He helps them pick Ryan Poles. Poles calls him on vacation over the weekend and goes, "You're out." Did you see that coming? And Robert Quinn, is he the next guy out of town?
I didn't see it coming. You know, I can say that these things aren't that unusual where, you know, like sometimes over the first 6-7 months of a new regime, there are guys filtered in and out. And a lot of times that can depend on the availability of certain people that, you know, the new guys want to bring in. So, you know, it can be 5 months, 10 months, 15 months later, after guys are hired, that someone they want becomes available, and that necessitates getting rid of somebody else. So, you know, I certainly think that, you know, it sucks, the timing of it and everything else, and that it happens right before training camp and while everybody's on vacation. You know, it's an unfortunate reality, though, of what happens when a new regime comes in a lot of cases in the NFL. And then, I mean, yeah, I wouldn't think that it would be like that out of line to tie the return of somebody like Robert Quinn to something like that when there's a relationship there. So I think certainly something to keep an eye on.
In terms of the Deshaun Watson situation away from Chicago, we're just waiting now for the judge's ruling on suspension. Right. Is that the next shoe to drop?
Yeah, so she basically, you know, had 3 days of hearings last week. Heard from the league, heard from the union, heard from Watson's camp. And now it sounds at least like she's handling it very much like a court proceeding, you know, where she's asking for, you know, for basically replies from each of the sides. And I believe that those are due next week, which, I mean, would indicate, of course, that she's not going to make a decision until at least next week. And I think that's the one interesting piece to all of this, Cap, is like, you know, we've all had this timeline in our head, you know, where it's, oh, well, is the bad news dump going to come July 1st before the 4th of July weekend? And, you know, is there going to be a decision before training camp? And I think the league would normally operate that way. The thing is, you know, the arbitrator, her priority is making the right decision. It's not following anybody's timeline. It's not going to be based on, you know, how the Browns can prepare for training camp or how anybody else can prepare to play for the Browns. You know, her priority has to be on making the right decision. And so as much as the league might want to put this to bed before training camp, as much as the league doesn't want attention on this when football actually starts, as much as the league might have liked to drop the bad news over a holiday weekend, I think it's, you know, been made pretty clear at this point that Sue Robinson's priority isn't to do that. So, you know, like, I think at this point we're all sort of waiting on her, and it's unpredictable because we don't really have track record with her when it comes to NFL things. I mean, obviously she's come in from the outside. So it'll be interesting to see which way this one goes. I would say this, though. I do think the NFL is at least operated as if it's a little bit less comfortable than you might expect that it's going to be able to get the sort of punishment that it wants.
So if you're a predicting man, what does he get?
I mean, my gut right now, and I want to, like, preface this by saying, like I don't know what Robinson's going to decide. I don't think anybody does, right? My gut right now tells me that the NFL is squeamish about where this is going. And the NFL, if you look at it, has sought, you know, an indefinite suspension. and the settlement talks broke down over the league's insistence on at least a year. And so, you know, if you look at those two things and then you see the way the league is operating, right, like over the last month, they've sort of gotten their story out there. One way or the other, their story, their side of the story, what they want has gotten out there. The other thing I can tell you is that the arbitrator, my understanding, hasn't been happy with the fact that this has become public, because so much of this has become public. So, you know, like I put all of that together, and I would just say to you, Cap, like, if this was going to be what the NFL wanted, there'd be no reason for them to talk. They wouldn't want to rock the boat. They wouldn't want to upset the arbitrator. And that tells me that the NFL thinks that it might wind up being less than a year, at which point, if she says 6, 8 games, 10 games, I think maybe it's somewhere in there, then the commissioner has a decision to make, and that's going to be, do I want to impose what we wanted all along, which he can do? Do I want to pass this off on a designee, or do I want to abide by the decision because I don't want to undermine a process that we just negotiated with the union?
So what do you think he would do? Because I look at the situation, and if I was the commissioner and I have the ability to do that, if she comes back and says 6 games, I would say, I'm offended that that is what we've gotten, and I am going to use my powers. He is suspended for a year, and it's indefinite. We'll revisit this next year.
I think there are two reasons not to do that. Okay, now I could see where maybe then there's a settlement, right? Like maybe then we get there, and if it were 6 games, maybe they make a settlement on 8 games or 10 games. The reason not to, you know, go way overboard and rule with a heavy hand here. And listen, like, I think we can all agree what Deshaun Watson has been accused of is awful, but there are two reasons. Number one, you want to avoid going back to court. The NFL does not want to go back to court with one of its players. We've seen this in the past. And one of the reasons why they negotiated this process in 2020 was to avoid going back to court. And if you go to a year, I think, and on after, you know, like the arbitrator hands down something far less severe than you're risking going to court. The second piece of it is, you would just completely undermine the process you just negotiated with the union. The 2020 CBA, obviously, like, that wasn't as messy as the 11th CBA, the negotiation. But one of the main things was they wanted to take the judge, jury, and executioner power of the commissioner away in cases of discipline. And, you know, I think that there were some owners really that also felt like the league shouldn't be acting as its own investigatory operation. You know, like that the league should follow law enforcement and that the league shouldn't be getting itself in these messes. And so, you know, like there are a lot of people who pitched into the process of negotiating this new process. And it would not be great if the first thing you do with a high-profile case that goes through this process is completely undermine that process by overruling the decision you got from an arbitrator. On top of that, if you're like one of these former U.S. District Court judges, do you want to participate in this process going forward if that's what the result is in the first high-profile case? I just think that there are issues that people are overlooking if the commissioner does make the decision to overrule what Sue Robinson decides in the next couple of weeks.
Well, we will have you back next week, and we may have a decision by that point. So if it's indeed a year,
yeah,
and it's indefinite, we'll revisit, but it's a minimum of a year. The Browns have no recourse, so do they put Baker Mayfield back on the field? What do they do?
That's a hard thing here. And I said this to Hoodie last week, Cap. All my information over the last, you know, 4 months has been that the two sides are done with each other. And the, you know, Baker Mayfield's camp has maintained all along that he's finished with the Browns after the way all that went down. You know, on the flip side, the Browns have operated like a team that has completely divorced itself from Baker Mayfield. They offered to take on half of his salary to facilitate a trade. That's not treating Baker Mayfield as an insurance policy. You know, like, they actively, the reason he's not gone is because they haven't been able to find a taker yet. Thing is, like, they signed Jacoby Brissett with the thought, this is going to be six games, this is going to be eight games, this is going to be something like that, and we need somebody to come in and hold the fort. They didn't sign Jacoby Brissett thinking he's going to be our starter for the whole year. So if it's six games, if it's eight games, I think they stay the course. If it's a full season, I'm just talking from my perspective. I don't think, like, I think the Browns would be smart to revisit it, because I don't think they're going to find a better quarterback for them in 2022 if Watson is out for the year than Baker Mayfield. And on the flip side of it, like, as pissed as Baker might be, if you're Baker, is there another team that's going to be as well equipped to put you in position to earn a starting job somewhere else in 2023, make money in 2023, than the Browns are, than the team you know, the system you know, all of that? So I think there's a logical conclusion where there could be a reconciliation. I just haven't gotten any indication to this point that it's going to happen. But, I mean, logic tells you that if it's a year suspension, it would make some sense for both sides to come back to the table.
Albert, have a great rest of your day, and look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, thanks. Hey, prayers with everybody in Chicago, of course, and I hope everybody in Highland Park is doing all right.
Appreciate you. Talk all to right. you. There he is. That's our guy, Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback and SI.com. All right, while I was gone, the Bulls chose continuity. AK has consistently said, Arturis Karnišovas has consistently said, I like our team and I want to see it healthy. Zach had his surgery. Lonzo Ball is recovering. Goran Dragic is now your backup point guard. So, and Andre Drummond gives you better interior rim protection than you got from Tristan Thompson. So, where do they fit now in the Eastern Conference? If we assume everybody healthy, where do they fit? Do you like what they did? 312-332-3776. Be right back.
Cap. J-Hood.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Watch the show on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Rolling on with Shay and JR. I'm Cap. Hoodie's off today. He'll be back tomorrow. 312-332-3776. 312-332-3776. The Bulls chose continuity. But where do they fit now in the Eastern Conference? We've been reporting that they were going to offer Zach the max. I kept hearing people go, well, what's going on? Why haven't they done it yet? And I'll be honest with you, when day one passed, and they hadn't got it done.
We'll let you off the hook. You were sick, buddy.
Yeah, we're giving you some leeway. I mean, you just called it on yourself, so go ahead.
So when they got through day one, I remember saying, and I did one of my recaps, I'm like, what is going on here? How is this not done? What is going on? And Zach took a few calls. Bulls stepped up with their offer. Done. They want continuity. Period. That's what Arturis is saying. Take him at his word. He wants continuity. He wants to see his team play. And he didn't get that opportunity last year because Lonzo Ball went down in early January. Zach's knee was bothering him. Vooch had COVID. Zach had two bouts of COVID. Please, I don't want a second bout. Please. He's all vaccinated, right? Because I am.
He played in Toronto, so we know he's vaccinated, yeah.
Yeah. My brother and my sister-in-law, who are doctors, and my friend who's an infectious disease doctor, all three were giving me guidance during the whole process. I'm like, please tell me I can't get this again. Well, you should be good for 90 days. Like, you're bulletproof for 90 days, they say.
I tried giving you guidance, but you wouldn't let me come over.
Yeah, he did offer me. JR offered me, want me to go pick you up some weed at the dispensary. And I said, no, I'm good.
I will tell you, when I had it, I smoked a little, and it hurt. Like, it was way more, it's typically not painful, but when I had COVID and my lungs were all messed up already, and I smoked, it was, like, painful smoking.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with it.
I did not
Of course you didn't, JR. You're built for it.
I did not have anything. No alcohol, nothing. I didn't even eat that much.
I have to ask, were you talking the paint off your walls? We were all here wondering who you were talking to.
Yoshi, did you see that play?
I did talk to the dogs. I was bored as hell. I lashed out at my wife. Yes. I was not a happy camper.
Wait, why did you lash out at your wife? You're the one who got sick. Oh, you're mad because she made you take the COVID test.
No, not at all. Because I wouldn't have wanted to get any of you guys sick. And so I'm glad I took it. I'm glad I found out I have it.
So why did you lash out at Mindy?
Because she wasn't there.
Oh, you need Mindy to take care of you. That's why.
Kind of.
Also probably some jealousy. Worst. She's up on the lake enjoying the 4th of July, and you're at home on the couch, curled up in the love seat with COVID.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, it is sickness and health, Cap, except for COVID. You can isolate there.
Well, you could flip it her way, too. Love and sickness and health, unless you're sick and I'm not coming around you. Anyway, so I'm following along on all the NBA stuff. And then Kevin Durant is asking for a trade, and I start playing with the ESPN trade machine on my iPad. And I'm like, would I do this? Can we get him for Kobe White, Vucevic, and some picks? No chance. I call a buddy of mine who works in the league. What's it going to take to get Kevin Durant? This was after the Gobert deal went down. He said, okay, you saw what they got for Gobert, right? He said they got 5 number ones, 4 and this year's number one pick, and more. Beverly, Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, whoever the number one pick was, and 4 more picks. That's 8. 8 assets for Rudy Gobert. He said, for you guys to get Kevin Durant would probably cost you Ayo Dosunmu, Dalen Terry, Patrick Williams, Nikola Vucevic. He threw one more name out there. There was one more. I can't remember who else he said. Maybe he said DeMar. And 4 number ones. He said, and that might not get it done. They want 2 all-star level players and a collection of number one picks.
Yeah, I'd choose continuity too if I were AK.
He said, Kevin Durant's going to say, I'm not going to Chicago. They got nothing left. Who am I playing with?
Bulls weren't on his listed destinations either. Like when he came out and said he wanted to be traded, he gave them a list of preferred destinations and the Bulls were not on it. So you'd really have to offer something extra.
Yeah. Again, continuity is fine. I would like to see them do more. I would like to see them do more. But what more is, I don't know.
Hoodie asked the question last week before free agency started about where you're at with the Bulls. See red, lukewarm, or cold? Where are you at this morning, Kev?
See red. That's obviously the best. Lukewarm or cold? I'm pretty much sea red. I'm like between lukewarm and sea red. Like I've got to know, like tell me why Goran Dragic, who got offered a deal by Dallas is good. Why did Goran Dragic pick the Bulls over Dallas? I know Vucevic had a lot to do with that. They have a great relationship. But why? Other than playing with his buddy, why did he decide, I'd rather go to Chicago? It's not the money. He's not making crazy money.
My theory is they offered him more playing time, and he is their exit ramp on Kobe White. Now that you have Dragic, you feel okay giving up Kobe White because you're not leaving that spot vacant.
You wouldn't be anyway. You would have gotten rid of Kobe White anyway once you got what you deemed was an acceptable return. And Goran Dragic is, what, 35 years of age? 35 years of age. Nice backup point guard. I like Goran Dragic. I think he's a good player. Nice backup. So if you want to minimize Lonzo Ball's workload, you got a professional guy there. I get it. They have not addressed perimeter shoot. They have not. They need more perimeter shooting. That's what they have to get. Like Joe Ingles signed with Milwaukee, right? Jay?
Yes.
Okay, he's coming off an ACL. Why can Milwaukee get him done and we couldn't? He got a small deal. Guy could shoot the heck out of it. And then here's the other question. Does Golden State have a different salary cap? It's like Golden State...
They're going to pay $500 million on payroll this year. You know that? With the luxury tax factored in, their payroll is going to cost them close to $500 million.
Yeah, they're going to pay this insane amount of money. The Rams, they just keep adding guys. Oh, we want that guy. Oh, we'll take that guy. Oh, we'll take this guy too. We'll take that guy.
It all depends on the willingness to go into the tax.
You're telling me the Bulls are not willing at all to go in the tax? I don't believe that.
What does it look like? I mean, we can believe what we want, but what does it look like?
They're right close to the line. Are they saving so they can do something in season?
Well, and you want to avoid because you don't want to pick up the repeater when you do it one time, then the following season it grows. I mean, Golden State's in like their fourth year of repeating. That's why their roster is going to cost them $500 million.
Well, I got to know more. We're going to try and have Billy Donovan on this week. So we'll figure all this out. 312-332-3776. If you've got a comment, question, thought, where are you on the Bulls? And a hot dog salesman in Florida got in a little trouble over the weekend. Next.
Cap J Hood.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
In the air to center. Ortega over. Now back. He makes the catch. And the Cubs tie a season high with a four-game win streak in one of the best pitching performances by their staff this year.
2-0 pitch. Suzuki gets a hold of one. Back that goes. Off the wall and left center. And a good ricochet for Seiya. Heading for third. They're going to wave him in. Suzuki heads for home. The throw to the plate. Not in time. Seiya Suzuki touches them all. And the Cubs grab a 2-1 lead off of Josh Hader.
Joey Chestnut unofficially. 63 hot dogs and bun. A winner by 20, title number 15 for the greatest eater of all time.
And the 0-2, and a deep drive out in the right center. That ball back there, and it's caught by Buxton. And what do we have here? We might have a triple play. Tag applied, step on second, double play. Engel took off, Moncada took off. That is a triple play.
Well, the ball's caught, right? So you got to go back and tag up.
So we had history yesterday on both sides of town in baseball. Seiya Suzuki's inside the park home run yesterday. You heard Beth Mowins on the call on Marquee. Good call. That was just the 13th go-ahead inside the park home run in the ninth inning by an away batter since 1901. Since 1901, there have also been six walk-off inside the park home runs, but the Cubs were on the road, so it couldn't be a walk-off. And then for the White Sox, that is the first time in the history of the sport. Baseball's been around, what, 140 years? 150? First time there's ever been an 8-5 triple play. It's never happened. Adam Engel came out after the game, said, it's all on me. Yoan just saw me take off. He said, I saw Buxton turn his back, assumed he was going to play the ball off the wall, and so I took off. Yeah, not so much. He's a gold glove outfielder for a reason. Buxton's a stud. And White Sox lose. Joe Kelly, another lousy performance as the reliever. Gave up four runs in the 10th. Sox get one back. And then Tim Anderson strikes out to end the game as the tying run. Ball in the dirt, kicks away. He walks back to the dugout. Can't happen. Cannot happen. Hannes in Joliet. What's up, Hannes Wagner?
Hi, guys. How you all doing? I appreciate your show very much.
Appreciate you.
I've been watching the White Sox for 70-some years, so I'm as disgusted as I could possibly be after watching last night's game. I thought they had turned a corner when they got out to San Francisco and played three really fine games. They get home, and some of my complaints are, I initially thought that Robert was the equivalent of Willie Mays in center field.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've let him down somewhat, or he's let the team down, because, yes, he glides to these balls. He looks marvelous doing it, but he doesn't then throw to the right base as quick as he can. His fundamentals aren't sound. I would wish that he would watch a Ken Burns baseball series to see how Willie Mays played that position, because he has that talent, I believe, but he doesn't do it. I don't know where his power's gone. He's an incredibly strong man. His speed is legendary. He has all the tools, but somebody's got to get to him. The other thing I really find fault with is our wonderful pitchers, Cease and Kopech. They have wonderful arms, but when they're throwing the ball to the plate, they're not in any position to field the ball right back at them. They need to watch Greg Maddux or Burley, who could do that, because they're going to get hurt, frankly. I think of Herb Score getting hit in the eye, and I could see that happening to Cease, because he's dancing all the time from balls hit back to him. And Kopech doesn't get off the mound quick enough when he, you know, it's rare that they have that, you know, 3-6-1 double play, but yeah, he's never in position for it.
Yeah, it's tough when guys are, you know, used to, and appreciate your call, Hannes. Have a great day, man. We appreciate you. It's tough when guys get locked in. Their most pressing concern on their mind is finding the strike zone, getting people out. And that this is how they've played. Both guys have elite stuff. You don't like the way they come off the mound to field, they'll tell you I'm more worried about how I'm throwing. So it's disappointing to see a team with the amount of pure talent on it be as dumb a baseball team as I've watched in a long time. Dumb. Ball kicks away, you don't run to first, the end of the game. Ball is hit to a gold glove center fielder who, if it stays in the park, pretty good chance he is going to catch it. And you just take off. Triple play. Inning over. There's talent there. I know some people are like, I don't know if they play hard enough. When you don't hit, you look flat. I think they play hard. I do. I saw guys running hard last night. On the triple play, those guys were running hard. It wasn't like they weren't trying. It's just wildly disappointing. I see the Cubs. The Cubs play hard, man. Give them credit. They grind every single day. They just don't have much in the way of talent to trade. And the players they do have that they're going to trade should be guys they'd want to keep. Let's go to the phones. They're hopping. Paul in Orland Park. Hey, Paul.
Hey, man. You know what? There's one thing to be about Renteria. Those guys didn't quit when they played for him. If Tim Anderson yesterday didn't run out that third base, he'd be sitting today.
Yeah, I don't know if that's accurate. I think guys...
Come on.
I can't tell you he would have sat Tim Anderson. Absolutely not.
Yeah, he would.
He did it
during games. During the middle of the game, he did it. When somebody didn't run out of base, hit the first base, he sat a guy.
I would bet you that if that situation happened, and appreciate your call, Paul, if that ball kicked away to end the game, he would be in the lineup today. He would. It's professional sports. They're still going to put the best team on the field. Did Tony have a discussion with him after the game? I would think. Either he did or a team leader did or a coach. I would think. I would hope. And that's how Rick Renteria would have probably handled it the same way.
Cap, I will say I'm on the other side of this than you. I know you've put all, you say the blame's fully with the players. You've spoken to people who will just tell you we have a very dumb team. The front office kind of assembled a team that isn't great defensively, not the highest baseball IQ. I get that. I do think when you watch the team, though, and you see the errors that are happening and that they continue to happen, I have to put a little bit on the coaching staff.
I can't disagree with that.
The blame is to be spread around. But I do think, like, yes, you have a team that might not be the smartest baseball team ever assembled. But when I consistently see the same mistakes on the base paths, whether it's Tim getting picked off at first multiple times, or if it's guys taking off, not tagging up on a fly ball out, or not looking at Super Joe at third base and getting the sign, whatever it is, I do have to start to wonder, couldn't the coaching staff do something about that?
Well, they could do what the guy just, was it Paul? Was that his name?
Yeah.
Just
bench him?
You could bench Tim Anderson tonight. I don't know who your shortstop is then. Danny Mendick's done for the year.
Tony has been on it. I mean, we know the roster construction as far as depth goes. There's nothing behind these guys that's reserved in the dugout that's going to be able to come out. Like, you can't bench Tim Anderson because you don't have a suitable replacement. And then I think when you look at the...
Well, how do you fix it then?
That's the issue. That's where I start wondering, because you keep being hell-bent on this team's just going to win the division. They're just going to get better.
I don't think I'm hell-bent. I think they'll win the division. I think that they're more talented.
I kind of wonder if this is just your team. They're just not that good. And you don't have a coaching staff in place that can fix these things. I think the question then becomes, if the blame is really on the players, are you saying that they're not coachable?
Yeah, I look, this team went to the playoffs the last 2 years. They've got starting pitching. I think they need another bullpen arm. They got to get Eloy Jimenez back. But at some point, as Paul just said, do you have the stones to bench Tim Anderson today? And go, dude, I watched you get picked off twice in the last week. Well, I was home with COVID. He got picked off twice. Now I watch you stand at home plate and trudge back to the dugout when the ball kicked away. I'm not seeing a sense of urgency. You're not playing tonight. But if you're going to do that, you've got to say that publicly. You've got to shame him. Guess
I don't
what?
Think they're going to do. We haven't heard that from Tony, because all we've heard from Tony is there are situations and there are guys who are being told not to hustle. So there won't be any shame, because everything keeps coming back to the injury bug. And I wonder how long this excuse is going to hold up. At the end of the season, are we just going to find out, well, we were really hurt. It was a lost year. If they don't win the division and don't make the playoffs. Or are we going to have some accountability and go, hey, the team just wasn't good enough. We didn't do a good enough job.
Again, I personally think this team's talented enough to win the division. They've got good starting pitching. I watched that series over the weekend. Starting pitching was excellent. So now you got to start stringing wins together in the division. You have to. But if somebody's going to get picked off twice and then trudge back to home plate or to the dugout after striking out to end a ball game, at some point, you've got to make a point. Guys, Tim Anderson is not in the lineup tonight. We're addressing it internally. He's getting one day off. We need him to be better. Period. Is this punishment? I'm not addressing anything further. Tim is not in the lineup tonight. He's available off the bench. Period. People can read between the lines. 312-332-3776. Phone line starting to hop. You got a comment, a question, a thought? Where do you hang the blame? Does Rick Hahn get blamed for the construction of the roster? Does Tony and the coaches get the blame? Or do you put it right at the feet of the players? Guys getting doubled off last night for an 8-5 first ever in the history of the sport triple play that cost you a ball game? Or Tim Anderson getting picked off multiple times and not running out of drop third strike last night? Where do you put it? 312-332-3776. Be right back.